WGNSTRadio.com presents a fan's perspective on Notre Dame sports. This is Dome and Domer.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer. My name is Mike Brammer. Joining me tonight, Ed Jordanic. For the next 15 to 20 minutes, we're going to talk about the infamous blue gold game there at Notre Dame. Ed, I got to tell you, it wasn't a great week for me. And to top it off, I'm in Gainesville, of all places, Thursday night for the first round of the draft. As you can imagine what that was like, having to sit there and watch Tebow get picked before Boston. In any event, I was not at the blue gold game, so I'm going to have you fill in most of the highlights. But for the most part, I mean, I guess the overall picture is it was a pretty decent, solid showing by the Irish. I mean, no blue gold games, I mean, you can't expect much. You're not going to learn a lot. They're not going to show a lot. But I guess what you do like to see is a little bit of excitement for the fans and a feeling of that we do have some athletes that are stepping on the field at least.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, contrast it with the last several years where you have the crazy scoring system and all these little special rules. At least this time, they basically just played football for 3 hours, you know? I mean, there was no return game, so you couldn't get a feel for that. They split up the teams like they used to back in the day. You know, it was almost like they picked a couple captains and chose up sides. So you really didn't have first team guys all on the blue team and second team guys all on the gold team or the white team. So, you know, and the place where that really kind of showed up in an area that I think we'll really have to keep an eye on is how the offensive line shakes out. Because, you know, you had guys, Chris Stewart and Chris Watt and you know, Wegner and on one side, and you had Robinson and the tackle by committees, you know, on the other side. So you didn't, I think that's really still a work in progress, and you could tell kind of by the way that they were shuffling people around that's something that it wouldn't surprise me if there isn't a set kind of rotation or a set top five until maybe, you know, 3-4 games into the season next year. I mean, I think it's going to take some time to kind of figure out who that offensive line consists of. And so I don't think we really know that yet. So they were kind of mixing and matching those guys quite a bit. But
yeah, you know, one of the things that'll be interesting, and I'm like you, I prefer just a straight up football game. It's always been that way. It's really awkward to go there when there's, you know, kind of these ridiculous scoring things that they do, it just doesn't do anything for the fans when you take that kind of approach. I definitely am more apt to go with the traditional approach. I mean, that's what people get excited about. But, you know, being that we've had to go through what we've had to go through the last, and unfortunately saying this is even hard to swallow, but it's 20 years now that this has taken us. Anything that you saw that, because obviously coming off of what we all know now to be true, and unfortunately for us, Charlie Weiss just really wasn't a head coach. I mean, the guy is just, he's not a head coach now. And it's pretty obvious that he could do one thing, which was recruit, but what he couldn't do is coach. And so for us, it's, all right, do we now have a head football coach, a guy that's capable of getting players emotionally charged? And although it's early and it's, you really can't see much, but just what your general sense is of what you saw in the game and what you saw from the players and even going back to what you're hearing in the papers, at least to this point.
Yeah. I mean, there were a couple impressions. I mean, kind of like what you just said. I mean, there are certain things that I think Charlie could coach. I think what he had trouble doing was leading. And I think there's a difference between coaching and leading. I don't think Brian Kelly has any discomfort at all with leading. I mean, I think he kind of puts on that leadership, coaching whistle and visor every morning. It's his second. I mean, he can't imagine not being the man. Whereas I think Charlie was uncomfortable with that at times. So, I mean, this blue gold game is a perfect example of that. I mean, obviously the offense, if you've been following a little bit, seems to have been behind the defense. So he kind of set things up, I think, to give the offense a little confidence. You know, the defense of sets were very vanilla. Obviously they can't, you know, knock the quarterback over. So he gave the offense a chance to make some plays, and they did. So I think he played it really smart. And I guess I think that that's what a good hedge coach does. He kind of takes the temperature and kind of what's going on. And, you know, you don't want to send the guys off into the summer workouts feeling like they didn't make any freaking progress at all with a brand new offense and with, you know, everything that's been going on. You want them to get into the end zone. You know, you want them to complete some passes. You want them to have some explosive runs. And I think, you know, check, 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 all those things were accomplished. You know, you had Sierra Wood kind of nice run. You know, Armando had a couple decent runs. You had some nice completions to guys in the middle of the field, you know. But one of the most encouraging things is obviously this offense, you know, begins and ends with the quarterback play. And, you know, and Chris was mobile. I mean, you know, I mean, I was not really sure what to expect, but I mean, you know, Kelly didn't baby him in this spring practice. I mean, he got him out there and if he was 75%, he got every last 75% out of him this spring. So I think that's really great for a quarterback's confidence after having an injury that is so, you know, it's potentially, you know, career ending in some cases.
Yeah.
If he blows it out again, but he, you know, he played and he played hard, and this offense requires the quarterback to be very mobile and to run with the ball on certain occasions. So you got a little bit of a glimpse of that. And, so if you want to talk about, you know, kind of, Kelly and getting guys going and stuff. I mean, I don't think that that's really, you know, I don't think that's an issue. I mean, they're not going to be playing unless they're ready.
Hopefully it'll be refreshingly nice and that you're going to see a lot of that out of Notre Dame, a lot of emotion. And sometimes we just didn't see that last year. You know, you just didn't see it until the fourth quarter. All of a sudden we realize that we're in a dogfight and we potentially could lose the game and we come to life. But, real quick point, what used to come out of last year that would kind of surprise me is how everybody said that Chris was actually a more athletic kid than Claussen under center. And you just immediately assume because he's a bigger physical presence that he wouldn't be. But supposedly he is an athletic kid that can run and he's got some moves. Not that he's going to be some great scrambling quarterback for us, but just to know that that is the kind of player he is, it gives you a little bit better comfort feel for him being in this wide open spread offense, because he is going to have to do that. I mean, there are going to be times in a spread offense like that where the right thing to do is to run, and you have to be able to run as a quarterback because it's the only way that you can keep the defense honest in situations where we start finding some success. So hopefully that will be the case with Chris. And you know, there's a lot that needs to be done between now and then. I mean, we're gonna know a lot about these guys come the first game of the season, obviously. But I will say I got high hopes in that I think we do really have a coach now that is the kind of guy that can get an emotional response out of players. I don't think you can do what he did at Cincinnati and not get players to play above the level that they are. And I'm not so sure that we got a lot of that in the last, you know, 4 years. Clearly we had some moments of it and in the USC game his first year with Charlie, but I just didn't get the sense that players were playing hard because they believed in him and followed him being the leader that he needed to be. But I get a sense that Brian Kelly could be that guy that can bring all those tangibles together. You know, just strictly speaking from recognizing that college football is an emotional game. I mean, that's what it is. Yeah. And when you're not playing with emotion, look out.
I think one of the real good things, Mike, is, you know, sometimes, you know, previous seasons or kind of what we saw last year, I mean, it stays with fans a heck of a lot longer, I think, than it stays with players. I mean, you know, one of the goals, I'm sure, of the spring was is just, you know, the past is the past. And I think these guys are, you know, working so hard and so kind of focused on new schemes and new offense and stuff. I really just don't think that they're thinking a whole heck of a lot. They're in this new system with a whole new set of coaches who have a whole new different way of doing things, and a whole new way of demanding things. So I think that they've really kind of turned the corner on the past. And, you know, the new staff's been very careful to not criticize the old staff and say, you know, what we're doing is no better, no worse. It's just different. But, you know, it is, there was a noticeable You know, certainly the speed of what they were doing, especially on offense, was different. The communications, I mean, there are not going to be any delay of game penalties for Notre Dame. under Brian Kelly. But the other thing that was really interesting to me that I kind of watched was I watched the interaction with the assistants, and the players on the sidelines on an individual basis, and kind of on a group thing. And I mean, these guys move at a pace that's similar to what they expect of their players. I mean, they are just nonstop. Coaching, and the very different personalities. Like, just to use a couple of examples, the two guys that are kind of like all coaching staffs have kind of good cops, bad cops. I mean, the offensive line coach, like the first name is Ed, and I think it's Warner. I can't remember from Kansas, I think. But, you know, I think this is, you know, if you're an offensive line coach, you have to be in a foul mood your entire life. You're never happy with, you know, it's never good enough. And that's a great, you know, it's kind of a great, great way to be for that particular position on the field. But, you know, I would watch him and he would kind of be shaking his head and, you know, what are we doing? And, you know, whatever. But you can tell that he is just so into it, and has just kind of like a one-on-one almost every single guy that comes off the field. Also in that regard, I mean, Chuck Martin, the defensive back coach, who was the head coach at Grand Valley State. Really intense guy, just kind of all over everybody from 1:30 until whatever it was, 4 o'clock when the blue gold game ended. And it didn't seem like in a berating way, just in a coaching them up, you know, type of, approach to it. And, obviously has, a real kind of vocal presence. And in terms of the good cops, Tony Alford seems to be a presence that, is a pretty, he's got a group, seems to be a little bit of a, you know, question mark. I mean, you're not quite sure how the receivers are going to shake out. But the guy that I was kind of really impressed with was the guy that's doing special teams and the defensive line, Elston. And he was, not as demonstrative, but just, you know, serious conversations with everybody kind of up and down the line. And, it seemed to me, at least, you know, anecdotally, to be kind of a good mix. As a matter of fact, movement and talking and shouting and kind of coaching that you saw was really from Brian Kelly. He was very much, he was into it and he'd be talking to the offense and stuff, but he spent a lot of time just standing there on the sidelines with his arms crossed, just kind of sucking it all in and just kind of observing. It was the staff around him, that was really working these guys. So, it was just kind of interesting to see the dynamic, staff.
That kind of goes back to just, you know, the role that a head coach plays in this day and in this age. And that, it's a guy that really does need to look from the top down. You know, he's looking at his football team from the sidelines, trying to assess everything that he's seeing and absorb it and get a feel for the strengths and the weaknesses so that he knows, from that view, all right, here are the things that I need to be working on because as a team, here's what we're lacking.
Right.
And, you can do that when you have a good set of assistants. And not that I want to go back and forth and pick on the previous regime and Charlie Weiss, but, you know, obviously the Charlie Weiss of, hey, look, I got to step aside and realize that I can't be the offensive coordinator, and he kind of backs up from that, and then all of a sudden the very next year he's back at it again, because that's what he does best and all that. And I that constant back and forth is a sign of a guy who's really not very comfortable with the role that he was playing. And you kind of hope and pray that, all right, now we're in a situation where we do have a guy that is totally capable of running the program from that aspect, and that it's going to end up showing benefits as a result of that. I mean, we'll find out here, but at least in my mind, you know, I'm thinking, all right, we had plenty of athletes on this team in the last couple of years. Why is it that we couldn't get it done? And you got to look at that. You just got to assume that, all right, that had a negative impact on us in the way that Charlie just wasn't capable of being the kind of leader that he needed to be in an emotional game like this, college football. And
yeah, well, there's, I mean, you know, you, I mean, we have to step back for a second and take a look at this defense. I mean, I don't, you know, if they're well coached and they've got a scheme that people are comfortable with, and if some of the stuff that they're talking about now is true, I mean, just purely on athletic ability, talent, recruiting stars, whatever you want to call it, this should be a solid unit next year. I mean, across the board, they have, you know, 4-star guys, you know, a 5-star, a couple 5-star guys. I think Ethan Johnson might have been 5 stars or maybe a high 4, and obviously Tail. But, and they all have eligibility left. I mean, there's only a couple guys that are gonna, be, I think, seniors next year. Because along the front, you know, you've got Ian Williams, who I think will be a junior next year, and same with Johnson, and you've got, Capron Lewis Moore, I think, who will be a junior. You know, those are the starting, you know, kind of 3-down guys. And then Fleming and Tao and McDonald and Brian Smith. Maybe Brian Smith will be a senior next year. Yeah, he'll be a senior. But, you know, and then I think so Brian Smith and Walls are really the two guys that are kind of the elder statesmen of the defense. But besides that, you know, you've got Gray with eligibility left and Blanton with eligibility left and Harrison Smith with eligibility left and, you know, I think Slaughter with eligibility left. And so you've got, nine, ten, you know, kind of frontline guys in that defense. So the people I think should be pretty optimistic about Notre Dame's defense, in terms of, you know, cause it was just dysfunctional the last couple of years with Tenuta and Corwin, and they didn't know, you know, it was just a mess. So, if they can kind of get them comfortable and just get them to be making plays, I mean, Tao, you know, I mean, it's just fun seeing a good football player with a lot of athletic ability kind of grow into a role that I think he was just, you know, he was just born to play. He was just born to play inside linebacker. I mean, you could just tell. I mean, Holtz used to say, I mean, he just, the line, you know, the time between him, you know, getting from his, you know, where he's at on the field to the ball carrier is a very short amount of time, and he is not in a good mood when he gets there. I mean, it's just really fun to see him take those angles, and he's just going to get better and better. I mean, you know, you can just tell he's a football player.
Yeah, I do. I got great. I think I have a lot of respect for Tao. I think he clearly showed, I mean, just as a pure freshman stepping in like he did, you could just see it, the way that he took angles on the ball, that he's got a nose for it. And we really haven't had that in a while. I mean, a guy that can really just smell it from the get-go. And, cause you know, being a middle linebacker, I mean, there are going to be times when you're uncovered. And, when you are uncovered, you got it. The weight of the shoulders of that defense is on you. Cause if you don't make the play, then we're in trouble. They're now in the secondary. And I do think that Tao clearly is that kind of kid that I have high expectations of him. And I think he's totally capable of it. And it's going to be a lot of fun to watch him over the next 3 years, because I do think he's that good. I mean, and everybody wanted him.
And you know, before we would be remiss if we talked about this a little bit before we started the podcast, Mike. But I mean, you know, Nate Montana really, you know, he really did a good job yesterday. I mean, if you would have been reading the papers around here, you know, the internet and stuff before the Blue Gold game, you would have thought that, you know, it would have been a miracle if he could complete a pass or get on the field without falling down on, you know, on his own face. But he looked good. I mean, you know, he was serving, you know, he got the ball to the guys. You know, he's got kind of a funny throwing motion. Certain other, you know, things that he does, you could swear you're watching his dad out there, just the way he carries himself and little mannerisms and stuff. But he did a really good job delivering the ball. He did a good job on his feet, scrambling. He found some guys in the open. He did a really decent job, and I think that, you know, Notre Dame fans should feel that at least that it's not kind of, you know, Dane Crist and, you know, say a prayer, because, you know, he really came into his own Saturday, and I think he'll have some confidence now going into the offseason. So, you know, he's going to be in the mix. He kind of went from, having nothing really more going for him than his name to, hey, this guy could maybe play some little bit of quarterback. So that was really encouraging. The numbers don't lie. He had a good day. So if Notre Dame fans are kind of, you know, looking at the statistics from the Blue Gold game and saying he was playing a bunch against scrubs or something like that, not at all. He was playing against a lot of first team defensive guys, and he made plays. He did a real nice job.
Yeah, I didn't get to see the game. I did go on the website and take a look at a couple of the highlights, and it looked like he put the ball right on the money at least. There was a couple nice touch passes there. And who's to say? I mean, maybe he's a lot like his dad. His dad wasn't exactly the best practice player in the world.
Exactly.
His dad certainly wasn't going to get the starting nod unless something strange happened, and sure enough, it did. And
the
who's
rest
to say?
Is history.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's a better feeling knowing that, you know, what if he would have come in there yesterday and you know, been 5 of 16 with 2 interceptions.
Right, and fumbled 3 snaps.
Yeah, I mean, then you're thinking, all right, God, our whole future and hopes are only in Dane Crist. And you know, to step on the stage like that and make no mistake about this, there is an awful lot of pressure on that kid to be able to live up to the hype, even wearing, you know, the number 16 and everything. I mean, you can't just underestimate the amount of pressure from having that last name in a Notre Dame football uniform. I mean, there's just, his entire career is going to be based on what his dad did, not what he's done, if he even does anything. So, you know, from that standpoint, that's a real good sign, I think. And it's good. I mean, put a little pressure on Crist. Let him know that, hey, a kid with Montana is right behind you. you know, that stuff's kind of cool. So hopefully that'll play out. Along with, you know, these freshmen that are coming in that are supposedly pretty decent talents as well. That's going to be interesting. Yep. All right, well, let's do this. Let's cut it off there. Certainly we'll be back probably later towards the summer as things start to heat up and there's some things to report. But from that standpoint, at least right now, things look pretty good looking ahead, and let's hope the next season bodes well for us from that standpoint.
Yeah, as far as I know, no major injury Saturday. And, you know, that's always a big one when you've got the guys going, you know, full at it and, you know, in pads for a couple weeks and a blue gold game, you know, pretty much, you know, game condition. So that's always a good thing when you kind of come out of the spring without anybody apparently, you know, sidelined for the fall.
Yeah, that's news to hear. All right, great. Well, you've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanic, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.